free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, where you can see our past lineup of speakers, downloads, and past shows, see who's coming down the pike. And if you're listening live, which we are not today because we're doing a pre-record, you can see your call-in numbers, so that's irrelevant. Unless you happen to be listening to this show live, we're doing it an hour beforehand live. We have as our guest today, July 28th, 2008, Ron Taylor and Dwayne Robinson and John Nunley, all from TMA Global Wind Energy Systems. They have a vertical axis wind turbine design that I have seen. I went out and visited about 2 years ago. Very interesting and fascinating. They are one of our top 100 energy technologies. The New Energy Congress has had them in that listing nearly from the beginning that when we started that top 100 ranking. And Ron Taylor is the founder, chairman, and the initial inventor. They since have had many improvements from the engineers and whatnot that are involved. Dwayne Rasmussen is the president of the company, and John Nunley is involved in as a director and in marketing. So Ron, Dwayne, and John, thanks for joining us.
Sterling, thank you, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. So tell us, what is it that makes the, first describe the vertical axis turbine design that you have, and what kind of sets it apart or makes it different from other designs that are out there?
Well, the main factor, Sterling, and this is Ron Taylor, that sets us apart from the other turbines that most of the general public is used to is we are a vertical axis turbine versus the horizontal mode propeller style turbine, if you will. That is our major defining factor. And then after that, we can, and during the course of discussion, talk about many other factors that set us aside from most of the turbines that you see installed in the United States and throughout the world today.
If I remember right, one of the things that makes your design advantageous is that you not only get the push of the wind going one direction, but you get a pull from the shape of the, it's like a wing of an airplane going toward the wind, and the thing is spinning just barely above the speed of the wind, so you are having virtually no bird kill except for what birds might fly into walls.
One of the things that you're talking about is the push-pull factor. The push is the force of the wind on the front edge of the blade. The pull is actually a lift factor. It's a high-velocity, low-pressure area, much like over the surface of an airplane wing, that creates the lift essential that, as far as our knowledge is concerned, other vertical turbines have not perfected it to the point that we have. And it works in a different plane, in a vertical plane versus a horizontal plane, as do the propeller-type machines. For years, the Savonius rotor, which is how you would technically describe our rotor, has been known as a drag device. In other words, there was a significant amount of resistance on the face, on the backside of the rotor, opposite the face that the wind pushes against as it made its rotation back into the wind to catch the wind, if you will. What we have designed is a turbine that has protective air foils that give that backside rotation the protection, turning it from a typical drag machine into a vertical lift rotor where we see virtual power stroke because of the processes there, aeronautical and processes we go through and how we factor and work with the wind, that we have virtually a power stroke for about 345 degrees of a full rotation, where a typical drag Savonius rotor would have about 160 to 180 degrees of resistance. So that's what has given us the real breakthrough in efficiency and output of our turbine versus previous designs, and also gives us a significant advantage over the horizontal technology, especially in high or extreme wind conditions.
Yeah, that was another aspect that I remember, that your system was able to handle the high winds, which is where there's a lot of energy. And rather than having to turn yours off, you're just gobbling up all kinds of energy from the wind at those high wind velocities. Of course, there is a limit. There is an upper end that you have to shut yours off as well, but there's a whole range that you can utilize where others can't.
Yes, we have a much broader band of productive capabilities than do the horizontal technologies, and yet we have an initial starting point at pretty close to where they start as well. We see a lot of emphasis put on low wind areas and low wind production, but in those low winds at where you have typically the horizontal propeller and RTMA vertical turbine reaching nameplate capacity at anywhere from 13.5 meters per second to 15 meters per second. When you're only at a one-half of that, you're actually only getting about one-eighth of the output out of the turbines. We designed this wind turbine to work in the higher wind areas because where you double the wind speed, you have eight times the amount of power. In other words, at 33 miles per hour, there is eight times the available power as there is at 15 to 16 miles per hour. And we think that's where wind turbines should operate. That's where we've designed ours, and we've designed it for the high wind areas. We compete fairly well in low wind, but you're missing out on a lot of production if you are shut down, like much of the horizontal technology is, in the higher winds. And you touched on our range of power. We have initial startup at about 8 to 10 miles per hour with a 3 meters per second range, much like the horizontal technology. We reach our nameplate at the 15 meters per second. Only we are still producing power right now at 62.5 miles per hour when they have long shut down in the 40-plus mile per hour range. They're shut down producing nothing, and virtually we are getting at 40-plus miles per hour, eight times the output that you see at 20 miles per hour. So operating a wind turbine in those higher, more violent winds, if you will, certainly makes the difference in return to the investor, lowering the per kilowatt hour of the cost as well.
Now, in terms of installing these things in the high wind areas, they're also harder to get to, some of the mountain ridges and whatnot. There's some really high winds up in Alaska. If I understand right, your system's easier to deploy, so you don't have to have these huge cranes involved in setup.
That's correct. We don't need the largest land type of cranes that are in very short supply as well for the setup of our turbines. We're also, though, very careful. We're not going to be putting these turbines up on the peaks of mountains. And granted, there are much higher velocity winds at the 9,000 to 11,000 foot range in many parts of the country as there are in 1,000 to 2,000 foot elevations. But you also have to determine what kind of impact you're going to have on the visible terrain. From looking at the turbines, we don't want to spoil view sheds or things of that nature as well, even though we can blend into and work with the environment we work in much easier than the horizontal propeller technology.
And one thing we've not talked about in terms of the appearance of your design is it's not just the Savonius turbine spinning. You also have some vanes that are stationary. that kind of funnel the wind into your turbine, into the turning apparatus. And so while there's a turning component, visually looks much more like a rigid structure, and so you don't see the interruption of the visual impact that you would see with the horizontal blades turning, where it's obvious, you know, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
That's exactly right. We visibly look more like a building, a square rectangular building standing there with the center part. The rotor is encased in the center between these directional foils that gather and accelerate wind into the rotor area, plus the fact that we can add forest greens, sage greens, browns, whatever, to the composite or concrete structure of our turbine, blending it into the background, since we don't have an avian kill problem or anything of that nature. So we try and blend into our background the best we can. I guess a great example of it is simply looking out our western window of our office building here in Cheyenne, Wyoming. We have our turbine is about 5.5 miles outside of Cheyenne, and granted it's only of the 34-foot height right now on this commercial model number one of our smaller turbines. But if another 5.5 miles or 11 miles from town, we have some 2.1 Suzlon turbines. Looking out our window, you virtually cannot see our turbine, but you certainly can see the Suzlons, that's what we talk about, not spoiling a viewshed, things of that nature. Let's blend it into the background so that we all need the wind energy and the renewable energy, but if we can be as unobtrusive as possible, it just is a win-win situation.
One of the things an inventive engineer is going to think of when you see the stationary structure there in a power generation capacity or arrangement, they might think, well, why don't you throw some solar panels up on those vanes, those stationary vanes, so that the sun-facing edge can also be harnessing some sun energy along with the wind, so you have a little more, you have two portfolios to draw from, so to speak.
Well, you're exactly correct, and we have always approached it as a quote-unquote multifaceted technology. Virtually for several years, we have looked at our turbine capabilities not only as a wind turbine, but we can and do add solar panels to the directional foils, especially those south and southeast-facing foils, and we can add them even to the roof portion, and obtain an extra 10% of output from that turbine. We also can add battery technology to the lower portion of it inside the enclosed electronics generator area of the base building. There are a couple other things that we can add to that, such as water purification, storage of that pure water in the hollow core center of one of our airfoils, and a biofuel backup engine with that fuel storage if we have to. So if the sun's not shining, the batteries are dead, and the wind's not blowing, we can still provide some base load power in extreme situations or for hospitals and things of that nature that absolutely have to have power on a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week basis. And that's something that is fairly unique to the renewable energy field, but we have always touted our technology as a quote-unquote multifaceted renewable energy technology.
What percentage of the so-called nameplate rating of the turbine would you consider to be base load capable, providing basically primary power for, say, an application like a hospital?
Well, it all depends, Sterling, on your wind regime. That's where you get your capacity factors, how often and how strong is the wind at any given time. Generally, in a lot of regions, especially quote-unquote low wind regions, you're seeing capacity factors in the 20s to maybe possibly a low 30s type, meaning that 30% of the time that turbine is at full output or producing power. You get into some of these western regions where you have higher and more consistent winds, you can see 40 to 50% and even above in some very specific locations of wind energy power production.
So if you're 30% of the time, and in some of the better regions, 40 to 50% of the time, producing your nameplate output, that means that between 50 and 70% of the time, you're going to have to be making up for a certain portion of that if you're going to be providing base load power.
That's exactly right, and that's where, in most cases, you do need to be utility grid connected as well. Wind is just a supplemental energy, such as the same as solar, but when you add another perhaps 10% of capability with solar, and maybe another 5 or 10% of capability with battery, which is virtually recharged under the wind or the solar, suddenly your 30% capacity is more of a 45 or 50%, and your 50% capacity starts pushing 60 or 70%, which is a huge offset.
So even if in that scenario, you know, we're using the hospital example where they're going to need power 24/7. How much of that? Let's say your tower, your wind turbine, to make things simple, just one turbine puts out 50 kilowatts. How much of that would be available for uninterrupted power output using your batteries?
We have to go back to the wind capacity there. But if we have nameplate capacity, that 50 kilowatts, you're going to, along with the battery, you're going to be getting about 20 to 25 kilowatts, generally as a capacity factor of that turbine.
And so you'd be able to produce half of the nameplate without interruption.
If the wind's not blowing, you can't, because then you're regulated by battery, and not many are willing. If you're using a hospital as an example, not many are willing to put out the amount of money for full battery backup at that time, because battery backup with the same power capacity is about 50% more expensive than the entire wind system itself. Mm-hmm. So it's like buying that automobile. You buy a basic standard shift automobile, and then you say, well, gosh, I like leather seats. So you add the leather seats, which is that solar system, and then you say, gosh, you know, air conditioning and a roof vent, etc., and nicer wheels and things. Well, I want to add those onto this vehicle too, and so there comes your battery backup, which is again more expensive. But it's like either buying a basic, i.e., wind turbine, basic turbine vehicle, or buying a multifaceted technology, which is going to cost you more, but you will have a higher percent of available power.
One of the things we've not talked about specifically yet is the advantage of the Sevonius design, where you actually can set your turbine on top of your generator, so the generator is at ground level where you can service it easily and disconnect it, connect it to the turbine, and you don't have to climb up inside of the tower to get to where your generator maintenance is going to be required.
That's a huge advantage we feel of our technology. All of your critical electronic components are at ground level. You don't have to go 250, 300 feet up the center of the tower and then either winch components up or have a huge land crane to lift components up to make any changes or any maintenance on that. And therefore, we have a lot less maintenance and a much, much lower operations and maintenance schedule on an annual basis than even the most efficient propeller units.
Now, in terms of the testing that you've done on these things, in the early development phases, as you were coming up with the optimal design for the setup that you've got patented. You spent quite a bit of time in some wind tunnel arrangements. Maybe you can talk about that for a minute.
We have virtually been testing and running these turbines, combinations of turbines, for over 12 and a half years. We said we weren't going to commercially sell a turbine until it did everything that we wanted it to do, and we are extremely close to that at this time. But we have built models that have been running in Wyoming wind conditions for over 12 and a half years. Some of those models we've run for 8 to 10 years with virtually no maintenance, just getting them to the point of breakdown, and it's taken 10 to 11 years to break down a gearbox or ruin a bearing or something of that nature. But in the last 2.5 years is where we have made the huge strides in the wind engineering and the wind tunnel portion of this technology. Our engineering staff, along with CPP Wind Engineering out of Fort Collins, Colorado, who we believe is one of the premier two wind engineering firms in all of North America, having done over 1,500 major buildings worldwide. They did the wind study on the original World Trade Center towers, things of that nature. They have done testing on propeller blades and the horizontal technology, as well as all of our vertical technology testing. But premier testing, we have, like I say, built, designed, and tested over 300 different revisions of rotor and airfoil and geometries in that wind tunnel, and spent almost a full year and a half and extensive hours of testing to arrive at where we are with our turbine today.
Now, it seems like it's been a couple of years since I was up there visiting you, and at that time you were talking about you were essentially ready to start producing this thing commercially. The version that I was looking at was basically a production prototype. Where are you at on that now?
We had to take a step back, very honestly, Sterling. We had tried to use and modify some electronic control systems from two major manufacturers, two worldwide manufacturers of very, very good companies. We maintain a very good relationship with both of them, but they just did not have the computer horsepower that we needed with our technology. We have developed and designed a new variable drive system that is based on an entirely different approach than like your General Electric variable drive systems. And we had to go back into engineering with a premier company on software and control systems design to get that accomplished. And we are just within a matter of weeks having the final results, the final piece of the puzzle for that, so that we can and will start selling these turbines commercially. But it has taken us that time, and we took the step backward because we would be able to, because of this, provide a more reliable and a better turbine with better and more consistent output for our end users.
You mentioned earlier a couple of other of your turbines that are installed nearby that you can't see. I don't remember those. Are those newer installations?
Those are actually older installations. Those are visible because we use the light beige paint on the base building. But two of our largest turbines, the 125 kilowatt turbine and the 250 kilowatt, which was a triple rotor stacked turbine that were on our test facility, we're only at about an efficiency of about the 20% range. So we had removed those turbines in order to put the new design on that particular site. And the other turbines are more of our history or quote-unquote museum pieces, if you will, from the very first small 6x6 dark green turbine that virtually the first wind testing was on a trailer behind a pickup down I-80 at as fast as we could go at various hours of the day and night, and then a couple of other early models and designs, one with the first solar and battery backup application that I might add operated beautifully for 8.5 years without any maintenance whatsoever until we actually ruined the gearbox, which was a speed reducer run backwards, which is not very efficient, as most folks will know from that have any experience with it.
Talking about efficiency, we have on our site that you're getting in the range of 40% wind conversion efficiency, which is near the optimum or the theoretical limit of what's possible for a turbine to harness wind from.
The BEPS theory, if you're referring to that, states that the maximum energy that you can extract from the wind, and it's a theory and held pretty true, is 59%. At that point, you start becoming an obstacle to that wind and actually forcing a percentage of it around the turbine so you're not producing power. But we, yes, in fact, the turbine we have is from the dominant direction in the 40% plus range. From our off side or our summer wind direction, which are light variable winds and have very little power, and therefore we don't give them much consideration, we still convert 32 to 35% of that wind into electrical energy, which is nearly as good as the very best in the industry that they do with the horizontal technology. And we have, in fact, tested a version in the wind tunnel with some additional design work on it that exceeded 50%, but we don't talk about that, and we certainly aren't going to be building that turbine until we get into high quantities of manufactured product.
So the design that I saw a couple of years ago is still the one you're going to go with?
That's the initial corporate design. We have tweaked it and done some things to it that we've gained an extra few percent of production out of that turbine as well. But that's the basic model that we will be selling commercially.
Okay. And one of the things that I wasn't aware of that you guys educated me on is that in most areas there is a predominant wind direction. And you'll be doing a study on an area for a year or so before you install a wind turbine, just so you can map the wind directions and speeds to see if it is suitable for an installation. And then you will point this thing so that it is oriented toward the predominant direction. Take advantage of that.
That's certainly correct. Your wind is a fuel you're putting into this engine, and you want to convert the highest percentage of that fuel into kilowatts. And we do prefer a one-year wind study with anemometers and that in a particular site, because properly siting your turbine of any style is going to result in more kilowatts produced for you.
And you said earlier that when the wind is not coming from the predominant direction, that you're still getting, you might be getting 40% from the predominant direction, but when it's not coming from that direction, you're still getting in the range of 32 to 35% conversion of wind to energy.
That's correct.
That's still pretty good.
We think it is, and yet concentrating on that dominant area, even getting an extra 8 to 10% performance out of it, will produce over the course of the year more kilowatts. And that we have proven time and time again in the wind tunnel. With the design, the airfoils need to be shaped precisely how they are, positioned precisely how they are in relationship to the geometries and that of the rotor to get the highest output of this turbine.
I'm curious in terms of I understand generally speaking that the higher you get off the ground, the more consistent and more and stronger the winds are. And your tower is going from maybe this example that we have on our site, the one that I took a picture of a couple of years ago, is starting at about 8 feet up in the air up to about 40 feet or so, maybe 35. And so you're getting from medium to higher velocities, you're getting up off the ground. Does that difference in wind speed affect create turbulences, create problems in terms of torquing on the vanes themselves? Are there any issues that way?
Well, you're exactly right. The terrain influence of the turbulence and that on the lower portion of wind turbines is precisely one of the biggest reasons, I shouldn't say precisely, but one of the biggest reasons that the horizontal technologies want to be up 200 and some feet to the center of the nacelle of their propeller blade, because when you're looking at, let's use a 2.1 megawatt prop for, as an example, you're looking at about a 250-foot center point of your propeller, because, and then they extend 100 to 150-foot blade from that, you're at 400 feet on the top side, and you're at about 100 feet off the ground on the bottom side. So there's a 300-foot range that blade is operating in. And they want to, what they do is you get away from terrain influence up from about 100 feet up. You get less turbulence, less terrain influence, if you will, so that that lower blade isn't operating in a different wind regime than the upper blade, because that's where you get a huge amount of additional stress factor on the propeller blades. And we have our initial testing site was at a utility company in Colorado who had an anemometer tower within virtually 100 feet or so of our turbine, with readers at 10 meters, 30 meters, and 60 meters. And we were there for over a year and a half, and the difference in wind speed at 10 meters and 60 meters averaged between 2 to 5 miles per hour. Now, that much extra wind to us is not worth building a tower 150 to 200 feet in the air and then putting all the equipment on top of it. Maybe in extreme low winds where you need that extra 5 miles an hour to get to 16 or 20 mile per hour wind speed, it could make a difference. But the TMA turbine is designed to take that ground compression, that increase in velocity from the ground, from the turbulence, and turn that into kilowatts. We also have to be aware of that terrain influence and study, because we either in cases need to be right out on the virtual slope of the terrain or back from the edge of that terrain by 30 or 40 feet so we can get away from a vertical condition which doesn't allow all of the wind to come into the rotor. We want to take all of that wind, turbulence or not, that we can into the rotor, because that's what produces the kilowatts. That's the fuel for your engine.
Another advantage of the vertical axis turbine is that you've got two points of attachment of the turbine, so you have a great stability. It reduces noise, it reduces vibration, whereas these horizontal axis blades, they've got one pivot point and all kinds of torque going on there that thing has to withstand. You get a huge leverage on a blade that big if you've got wind stronger on one side than on the other. And on your system, where it's attached on the top and the bottom, I would imagine that those kinds of stresses are almost negligible.
It negates many of those stresses, Sterling, and it certainly does. And when you're looking at part of our design work where we have that upper bearing and then a lower thrust bearing, we virtually are looking at seven moving parts with our turbine versus dozens, if not hundreds, if you will, on the horizontal technology. We don't have pitch and yaw bearings. We don't have rotational bearings. We don't have a lot of the hydraulic systems and that. We don't have to move blades and things like that to get the best performance out of our turbines. And it all adds up in the long run, and cost lower cost of kilowatts, and then more kilowatts sold, and that's why we designed this turbine as simply, as strongly as we possibly could.
Those vertical stationary vanes on your system, are those filled with concrete? What's the material inside of those?
On our smaller, medium-sized turbines especially, we will probably continue to use concrete. It's a pre-stressed tilt-up on the smaller turbines that makes for very easy, simple, and very rapid construction. On some of the larger ones, we might even use a slip form, but our turbines are also designed for a full steel infrastructure with either a composite skin or a light steel skin wrap, so we can build them out of a multitude of materials. That's one thing when we go international. We're not stuck with one specific thing. We have to have composites. We have to have fiberglass. Now, you can use available materials, if you will, getting less expensive and yet still very robust and reliable turbine. We can use a multitude of materials to build our turbines.
What happens in the higher wind situations where, let's say, a hurricane, for example, or tornadoes coming through the area, and you don't want the thing going through those stresses? What do you do?
We have, right now, our turbine is designed to withstand in excess of 125-mile-an-hour winds. We can even beef it up from that, virtually with no damage. When we reduce our moving parts down to 6 and add a variable drive permanent magnet generator to that, we'll be able to not only produce power in higher winds, but as far as our structure itself, in all probability, it could survive a direct hit by hurricane force winds, tornado force winds. We have actually recorded at the site, our test site, 104 mile per hour winds, and we have not had any damage or any problem whatsoever.
Now, one of the things I understand is an issue with these is the turbine itself might be able to withstand a high wind, but the generator can't. It can only go up so high before it starts burning up.
That is a consideration, and that's why right now on our present control systems and with the standard off-the-shelf generator technology that we're utilizing and will continue to utilize on many, we shut down at 62.5 miles per hour. Just to save that generator and that gearbox that we're utilizing. When we get into a broader band generator with the permanent magnets, we can and will operate higher. But very honestly, there are so few areas of the world that you achieve winds at a 5-minute duration in the upper 60 miles per hour range that it's really not worth the doing some of the additional design and structural factors to go much beyond where we do with our 125-plus capability.
Now, when I would imagine two scenarios when you're getting higher winds. Number one would be to just put a braking mechanism on there so it doesn't surpass a certain speed. The other would be to just shut it down so it stops working altogether. Is it able to do both of those responses, or do you go with one or the other?
No, we can do multiple. As a matter of fact, we have the capability through our electronic control systems to dynamically load that generator to the point that it acts as a braking system. But then we also have a dual or a singular set of braking systems that we can use for shutdown if necessary.
And that one you probably wouldn't be running because it'd be like running continuously over a period of time to slow it down because that'd be like a trucker riding his brakes down a hill.
Exactly. You don't want to do that. And that's why our control system is set up on a period of time. It has to be X mile per hour, like at the 65 mile per hour wind speed for a full 5 minutes. If it drops below that at any time during the 5 minutes, the clock, if you will, starts again, and we just continue to go ahead and produce the maximum output of power at that upper limit of our generator anyway.
Uh-huh. What about wind farms where you have multiple units in one area? What kind of spacing are you able to do compared to the horizontal axes?
Well, we can put our turbine in a much more concentrated type of situation. We've talked a lot about doing repowering or additional powering for existing wind farms by the capability of putting our virtually rows of our turbines between the rows of the propeller units because we would not create any turbulence or problem for them. nor would they create any for us, and yet we could significantly add to the output and the production of a wind farm. We have also done some wind tunnel studies and we're still working on that, of virtually putting our turbines within about one rotor height or even diameter apart. If you have a area where, like we have on some of our property, where 80% plus of the wind comes from one range, and virtually create a wind wall, forcing more wind through the rotor and getting higher production that way. So we have that capability of doing a couple of different things that the horizontal technology cannot.
I would think that would be a low-hanging fruit, where you have an existing wind farm that already has the transmission lines, they already have the real estate purchased and zoned for wind, to just throw these things in between those other turbines where they're not going to be affecting the horizontal turbines.
At some point in the future, that's exactly what you will see, but like all new technologies, new companies, we have to prove ourselves before you're going to see too much of those applications.
Mm-hmm. You're collecting quite a bit of data now. You're grid connected right now in Cheyenne there.
We have been for several years from our site with a multitude of different turbines, and with this technology we have been grid connected since November of 2006. Here recently, while we are doing our testing with our proprietary control systems, we have been running our power through a load bank so that we're not on and off the grid intermittently and creating any potential problems because they are upgrading the substation that we are going into, and we just safety is our first priority.
Okay. So if the company is interested in securing one of your turbines, what kind of lead time are you talking about at this point before they're going to see one installed?
Right now, if you were looking at our 10-meter tall turbine, i.e. our 25/100 kW turbine, you would be looking at about a 180-day lead time.
And in terms of the ease of installation, what is your production prototype at this point? How big is it, and is it something that could be loaded on a truck without any drama?
That current model I just referred to is 34 feet in height, and yes, the concrete components can be loaded on trucks. It would take approximately four semi-loads of equipment to move everything to site for construction.
And are you going to be manufacturing most of this in one place and shipping it, or are you going to do some of it on site or near the location?
We much prefer to be doing all of our this closest to, obviously, the location of installation, but we have componentized this turbine so that if need be, we can ship it and ship it, like I say, without any real problem.
In terms of a number that we can relate to, cents per kilowatt hour, in terms of the cost, what is the cost that you're looking at for the electricity generated from one of your systems?
There again, it all goes right back to what's your wind speed. In low wind speeds, in 16 to 20 mile an hour wind speed, you're fortunate if you can produce a kilowatts at 4.5-5 cents or less. Lower wind areas, it's even probably costing you 6 or 7 cents. But you get into class 6 or 7 wind regimes with high wind capacity factors, you're taking that 5 cents and putting it down into the 3.5-4 cent range for cost.
And for the lay audience, the 3.5 to 4 cents is on the bottom end of what commercial coal and natural gas plants sell electricity for wholesale?
Unfortunately, there aren't too many good wind areas that are that consistent, but they are available if you're, like you say, you do your testing or your homework and get the wind data that you really need, properly position your turbine and have a quality unit that will convert a lot of that wind into energy.
If a person wants to invest in TMA, Global Wind Energy Systems, how do they go about doing that?
We have a Reg D registration right now for multiple states, but it requires contact with one of the senior officers of the board, and then we are regulated by the Securities Exchange Commission under our Reg D registration to a qualified investor situation or experienced investor with a particular net worth, income level, things of that nature. And we would get into that privately with the individual that was interested.
Okay. We're nearing the end of our time here. I'm just curious if there's something that we've not addressed that you would like to bring up.
Well, I'd like to have Dwayne visit with you a little bit about the marketing potential and going into some of these areas of distributed generation, where we are going to go into within the next 6 months with beta site turbines, if you will, units so that the general public can get a good look, a close-up look, and kick the tires, if you will, capability of visiting three or four various sites throughout the United States where they can actually watch this and see this turbine in production?
Sure. Let's have Dwayne on.
Well, your success in your technology is dependent on revenue, of course. And the only way to get that in with new technology, I believe, is to get it out in front of the public. And not only the public, but the governmental agencies in various states, municipalities, and the people who buy the electricity from you, whoever that might be, whether it's a industrial user or whether it's a utility. And so in order to meet that requirement, we're looking at doing about 4 beta sites of our turbine. One in the Bay Area of California, and we've done a lot of work in that area. 2 in the state of Texas, one near Sweetwater and Colorado City, another one near Amarillo, another one on the Columbia River Basin between Oregon and Washington. These are all sites that are grid-connected and ready for our turbine to be installed. We have one possibility in the state of Colorado also, and in another one in southern Utah. But these would all be beta sites that we could take people to introduce them to the technology. And we're mainly looking at initially going into industrial areas and coastal industrial areas in California and Air Force and Army installations in the state of California again and in Nevada. These are areas where the other turbines cannot go, and we know that we can. In one area in California, we've already been accepted to install 3 of our turbines, and we're going back to that site within the next year or so to attempt to regain that permit. But we're really looking at offsetting power for industrial users that are paying a very high cost for their electricity. And we do have the blessings of the utilities in the Bay Area, which we're thankful for, that they're looking forward to us offsetting power costs so that they don't have to run additional transmission lines. And that's one of the things we're certainly after, and the governor of California is definitely in favor of us doing that exactly. So that's where we're looking at marketing within the U.S., and We're also looking at various license and joint venture agreements outside the country. And in fact, today I just rejoined a group that is looking at doing a license agreement in Ireland and the UK. And we have another firm that's looking at doing a license agreement in Poland, and also in, we have a very, very big interest in doing a wind farm in Mexico with a major firm. And we're looking at, on our desk today, a joint venture agreement with two entities on doing a license agreement or joint venture in all of India. So we're out there doing our part in marketing, but that's important. You need to get out there and make it happen. So that's my input.
What would you consider to be the low-hanging fruit? You said that coastal industrial areas, is that what you would consider because of the high wind?
Well, in the area, in the Bay Area in California, I have thousands and thousands of hours of wind data that we can use just to promote our turbine in certain areas. And these wind studies come off of areas where we can actually do our beta system. But we also have wind data from central and panhandle area in Texas with very good wind, and all the economic development people out of that area are looking forward to us locating there, and that would be the two areas of low-hanging fruit that we're looking forward to. Now, in the Bay Area, we're looking at offsetting power costs from 13 to 20 cents per kilowatt hour. That is far more viable than hooking to a wind farm and doing a power purchase agreement where you're selling your power at 3.5 to 4 cents. It just makes a lot more sense to us, since we can go into industrial areas, is to go in there and offset those kind of power costs. Okay?
So basically, they still have access to the grid, but you're enabling them to drop the amount of power that they require.
You bet.
Mm-hmm. Now, isn't one of the advantages of this system marketing-wise that you can install this where other systems can't be installed?
That's right. Most of the areas we're talking about, certainly in industrial areas, they have a height limitation and also a safety feature that standard turbines cannot go into those areas. One thing is that the height limitation won't allow them to get as high as they need to get. The other limitation is, like in the state of California, those blades cannot be lower than 50 feet off the ground. So it's very difficult to put a conventional turbine in an industrial area. Plus, they have a problem occasionally in those turbines losing blades, and that creates a real hazard, especially in an industrial area.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate you joining us for this segment of Free Energy Now. We've been talking with Ron Taylor and Dwayne Rasmussen from TMA Global Wind Energy Systems, and looks like they're just about ready to roll out commercially with their design that is super efficient and cost-effective. And we wish you luck in your endeavors.
Appreciate it, Sterling. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to your listeners, and we certainly appreciate that, and looking forward to getting this technology out there into the market here this year.
You're welcome.
You bet. And if anyone is interested, they can go to our website at www.tmawind.com. Thank you.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.